Yesterday's publication of a review into the Department of Justice and the departure of its Secretary General, Brian Purcell, leave a number of questions unanswered. Will a change at the top pave the way for real reform of the department? Where will the department's next Secretary General come from? And will we ever find out what happened on the night that Brian Purcell visited Martin Callan just before he resigned as Garda Commissioner? Well, to look at these issues, I'm joined now in studio by the former Governor of Mountjoy Prison, John Lonergan, and by Mick Clifford on the line from the Irish Examiner. Thank you both very much indeed for joining us this morning. John Lonergan, I'll go to you first of all. I mean, some of the quotes about the department, it was closed, it had a silo-driven culture, it had an inward-looking organisation with limited learning capacity, reduced openness to new ideas. I mean, you dealt with the department for decades. Does any of this surprise you?
No, part of it is true. I found some of it true. But again, it's like everything else. I guess when you have a review like this, you're going to any department or any organisation, I'm sure you can find a whole lot of things that are not right. I think part of it is justifiable, in terms of secrecy. For instance, you couldn't have openness and transparency in the Department of Justice dealing with prisons, the Garda Síochána and courts. So there's justification for some of it. You can't have, I suppose the culture has been there for probably 100 years, or the best part of 100 years, developed over the years. The whole, from the formation of the state, I suppose the Department of Justice had a very central and secretive culture. That culture is still there, and believe me, from my own experience of trying to change culture in say a place like Mountjoy, it's a slow, frustrating job, and it won't happen overnight, and it doesn't matter who leads. The reality is, you're bringing about change, you have to nurture it, you have to develop it, you have to encourage it, and there's a political dimension to it, Keelan, and it would be very wrong not to, and totally false not to connect the political dimension as well. The political dimension is a big part of it as well, and this has nothing got to do with Frances Fitzgerald now, because she's only after going in there.
But what do you mean by that?
Over the years, the political direction that the Department of Justice would take was very much, or the direction the Department of Justice would take on any issue would be very much driven by the political head of that department, and civil servants at the end of the day are there to serve the public and serve the minister, and so to isolate the whole thing and just say it is an organisational issue on its own. The question of resources, I made the point myself in briefings about this morning, that in preparation for decentralisation, that disaster of a political policy, the Department of Justice headquarters at 7276 Stephen's Green were disposed of, which meant that the Department of Justice was scattered all over the place.
This would be the kind of silo driven thing.
Well, sure, if you break up departments and have offices all over the place, it's almost impossible to have the sort of cohesion that the report is recommending. So there's a whole lot of structural issues, political issues, cultural issues that need to be addressed. And this idea that one person or a small number of people on their own are totally responsible, it's just not fair.
Really? So you don't think it's fair the way that this has landed on Brian Purcell's head?
I'm not obviously going to get involved in personalities at all, and I'm from my own belief system, it wouldn't be fair of me to start looking at individuals, except to say that from my experience and knowledge of how institutional systems and cultures in the public service like the Department of Justice operate, one person, no matter who they were or are, will ever be able to bring about that sort of fundamental change on their own without a huge amount of support politically, from within the organisation, and from a resource perspective. You're talking about training, you're talking about a whole lot of different elements to bringing about.
I suppose that the flip to that is that you look to the Secretary General of a department to lead the culture of a department. I mean, I know you've been talking about the culture within the civil service itself. Did you see that change over your tenure as Governor of Mountjoy?
Keelan, one of the things I wrote about this in the past, one of the things that I found almost disturbing over the last 15, 20 years would have been the clouding of the waters, and the blunting of the demarcation line that should exist between the political head of a department, which is the minister, and the civil service, including the Secretary General. And that was that I always assumed and believed that the professional civil servant was there to advise and to provide information and briefings for the minister and to make recommendations based on the facts, totally independent of the political interest. I believed, and I saw it in action, that civil servants got caught up in protecting the minister, involved in the minister's best interests, looking after the political interests of the minister. Now, I would argue and still argue that that is no business of any civil servant. Their job is to represent the public and to operate as professionals. And I believe that this particular report will be a watershed. I believe any senior civil servant that will look at this report will say, right, there's a changing of the goalposts. I better look after myself in my own interests rather than maybe often bringing in the bad news to the minister. We all know the reality is human nature tells us ministers don't want to be told daily bad news. They want good news. They don't want to be told bad news. And I'm afraid sometimes the bad news is watered down or diluted simply in order not to be annoying the minister of the day or whatever it is.
So did you find, John, say for yourself, like you were quite vocal when you were governor of Mountjoy about conditions in the prison. Did you find coming from the department, John, shut up about this. We don't want these kind of issues highlighted. Did you get those kind of
directives? Keelan, I had both experiences. I had experiences where it was expedient to put me out front and to be talking about reform and to be talking positively about things. And equally, I experienced where it was absolutely frowned upon and totally and utterly obstructed and objected to. So that's what I meant by the changing culture. At one time, they'd bring the media were brought in, openness and transparency to the prison, see for yourself. A week later, the whole system would be totally turned upside down and you'd be told, why are you speaking to the media? Why are you briefing anybody? So I think the report highlights this, having a strategy and having some sort of the difficulty with strategies are that the strategies continue to change as ministers change. And we know that that happens on a 2 to 3
year
basis.
Too much driven by politics and not enough driven by the strategy that was right.
I think there is a real role for politicians. Actually, we elect them. They are the heads of the departments and they're responsible for policy. But it's a political thing. And I think there's a line to be drawn between the political element and the administrative level. And civil servants, I think, need to go back to the stages, the old days, where they briefed ministers, where they informed ministers, where they provided recommendations. And then the decision was a political one. And if the minister dismissed, Charlie McCreevy used to boast that he regularly overruled his senior civil servants. That's fine, as long as the senior civil servant had covered themselves in terms of the written report. Written reports also became, frowned upon and took a back seat as a result of freedom of information, because people began to realise if I write recommendations they can be now found and brought into the public domain. And as a result, Keelan, I think a huge cultural change took place in that front as well, as people stopped writing and briefed more orally and verbally. And of course there's no record of oral and verbal briefings.
So no follow up there. As I say, we're also joined on the line now by Mick Clifford from the Irish Examiner. Mick, thanks very much for taking the call this morning. The major questions left outstanding at this point?
Well, first of all, just in terms of the report itself, I mean, just two elements to it that do jump out. First of all, if a review similar to this one was conducted into other departments, you would have to suspect that a number of the issues would come up equally there. The big difference here is the likes of the agencies that the department oversees, the Gardaí in particular, and the findings that there was very little control or oversight of agencies like the Gardaí. And from the secrecy point of view, I think a certain amount of it can be traced back to, and very similar to the culture in the Gardaí, back to a time, if you go back to the 70s, for instance, where there was a certain awakening, a certain amount of change in other areas of governance, but because of the security situation in the north, the likes of the department and the Gardaí were left to their own devices on the basis that there was a perception in government that they were the last bailiwick between the situation in the north spilling over, and that culture dragged on accordingly. Within the Gardaí, it culminated in, for example, in Donegal in the 90s, which precipitated the Morris Tribunal, which we thought would usher in a new culture. And within the department, with all the controversies that began earlier this year. In terms of the specifics about the recent controversies, I mean, what does jump out is that Mr. Purcell, whereas he was definitely a dedicated public servant, but in another scenario, when something like this arises, one could well imagine that he would leave effectively, either by early retirement or whatever means. But what overhangs the whole issue is the events of the night that preceded the resignation of the Garda Commissioner. Mr. Purcell was central to that affair, and therefore he is central to the question that remains outstanding. Did the Taoiseach effectively sack the Garda Commissioner on that night by sending Mr. Purcell with the unenviable task of conveying to the Garda Commissioner that perhaps he should do the honourable thing, as it might be called in some quarters.
So, Mick, are you, you know, is there a possibility here that Brian Purcell, as you say, has not been asked to take early retirement or to resign? He's been moved in order that we don't find out what happened that night that he went to Martin Callanan, to keep him on side?
Well, everything that has happened would suggest that that's very likely. Now, the benign interpretation might be that, for example, what he was asked to do that night was unenviable. This man had had a close working relationship with Martin Callanan, and then to be dispatched by the Taoiseach to, it is suspected, effectively tell Martin Callanan his time was up. It might be regarded as unfair, in addition to that, to have forced his resignation in this. But the other interpretation is that he knows exactly what he was told by the Taoiseach to convey to Mr. Callanan. So far, the Taoiseach has not said anything of what occurred that night. He has effectively parked it in the Fenley Commission, which was set up to investigate something entirely different. And it's highly unusual that a political event like that has been put into a commission of inquiry that was set up for the purpose of looking into this business of taping in Garda stations. And it all comes down to the fact that if the Taoiseach effectively had the Garda Commissioner sacked that night, he was acting completely outside his powers. The Cabinet has the power to do so, the Taoiseach does not, and he would be in on an extremely sticky political wicket if it came to pass that that's what occurred. As it is, Mr. Purcell is the man at the centre of it. He knows exactly what occurred, and you would have to suspect that perhaps he is being let down gently on the basis that he knows, to use that phrase, where the bodies are buried.
And it's very interesting about the Fenley Commission as well. I mean, there's been reports coming out over the weekend that the commission, which, as you say, was set up to investigate recordings in Garda stations, it would appear that there aren't anywhere near as many recordings as we were led to believe at the time.
At this juncture, it appears that apart from the specific incident of the investigation of Sophie Tuscan Duplantier in Bandon Garda Station, it would appear now that the whole hullabaloo that emerged at that time, the setting up of a commission, and remember, in every other instance, prior to the setting up of a commission of inquiry, there is a major song and dance, there is major initial review to go through. For example, Sean Gearn's report suggests that setting up a commission of inquiry 2 months later it isn't even set up. Yet, in that instance, in what looks like coincidentally to have been politically expedient, this commission was set up within 24 hours of hearing this report. The Garda Commissioner was gone, and the suspicion would remain that the commission was a ball of smoke that was set up to divert at the time to save the political skin of Alan Shatter, and following on from yesterday's report, to save also, or to cover up perhaps, the shambles of what went on inside the Department of Justice during the whistleblower controversies.
And of course, we could be waiting quite some time for anything to come out of this Fenley Commission. Do we know when we're likely to get a report from it?
Well, there's reports that it may now report by the end of the year, which could well be the case if, as it turns out, there was very little tape recording going on. Initially, when it was set up, most people were speculating it could be beyond the next general election, again, which would have been politically very convenient, considering that the Taoiseach insisted on including within its remit these events of the night before the Garda Commissioner resigned.
Mick, what's your take on it now? You have followed this from the very, very beginning. Do you think this is going to close things down for a period of time? Or do you think there is still a potential for this incident, if you like, to take further scalps?
Well, if you look at what has happened, Maurice McCabe, the Garda Sergeant up in Ballyburgh, County Cavan, unusually for somebody who became a whistleblower, and particularly within the culture of the Gardaí, where he was stymied at every turn, he persisted in following through on what he believed was wrongdoing. As a result of that, the Garda Commissioner has resigned, the Minister for Justice has resigned, the Secretary of the Department of Justice has been moved, there's going to be an overhaul in the oversight of the Gardaí through a new independent commission. greater powers are being afforded to the Garda Ombudsman, and now there's going to be an overhaul of the Department of Justice. What has emerged as a result of one Garda officer following through on what he saw as serious cultural problems in one station now looks like, if things go according to plan, it could lead to a total overhaul in terms of the criminal justice system, that element of it related to the Gardaí and the Department of Justice. I mean, if they follow through on the recommendations of the Toland report yesterday and on the recommendations to for an independent Garda authority, albeit now there are issues there around the security element of it, you know, there could ultimately be cultural changes. But as John Lonergan was saying, culture doesn't change overnight. It's still going to be a struggle. But we thought all of this had changed back in 05 with the Garda Síochána Act. It's quite obvious it hasn't. It's nearly, this is another run at us belatedly, but you have to hope that ultimately it will lead to a cultural change in these issues.
Absolutely. I suppose over now to the new Minister, Francis Fitzgerald. But John, as Mick was saying, you served for so long in the prison service yourself. You know the Department of Justice intimately. I mean, many battles over the years. Can you see real change coming out of this?
I'm an optimist. I can, but I think it is going to be a lot more difficult and more challenging and more frustrating than the you know the image that's been projected at the moment, that this will all be resolved in a couple of months. You're talking about culture change in the Garda Síochána, the best part of 13,000 people. That's a huge challenge on its own. And now you're also bringing in the whole culture in the Department of Justice, which is there as well for a very, very long time. So you need, the report talks about leadership, but leadership can only do so much. You need training, you need a whole new approach, you need political leadership and political commitment, and there has to be political changes as well. This isn't happening in a vacuum. There's a political interest at every element of it as well. Clifford has raised about the government itself and their interest, and at the end of the day, believe me, my experience is that, you know, political expediency will always win over unless the public make an issue of it. And I'm not very optimistic on that front.
Okay, well, on that note, John Lonergan and Mick Clifford, thank you both very much indeed for joining us this morning.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.